my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk, episode 434, to be broadcast on Wednesday, March 19th, 2025, on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you're watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment, and we should be able to respond. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and you're listening on Facebook Live right now, you can just comment down here below, or you can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's Rant of the Week. How's your backup chain supply? Yeah, bicycle chains. You know, the chains, you know, the thing that kind of makes your bike go forward. Without that, you're kind of screwed. Chains subject to steel tariffs, some cables and other products too. The 25% U.S. tariff on steel and aluminum that took effect on Thursday applied to bicycle chains, some bicycle cables, perhaps some locks, and a wide variety of hardware and other products that are used in the bike shops and by manufacturers. Thank you, Donnie. And last week, Secretary Duffy dedicated staff to start the process of clawing back millions of discretionary dollars for bike lanes. How will he spend it instead? More in the show. Oh boy, that's about as ranty as I can get. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. There's just some things going on down in Washington, D.C. that just are not good for cycling. Anyway, on a positive side, nearly 5,000 people attended the Philly Bike Show this year. That was last, I think, Saturday and Sunday at the Philadelphia Convention Center, with show director Bina Bilinki saying that the show is returning to pre-COVID numbers. Yay! What do you know? People are getting back out again, going to bike shows. Yay! That's a good thing. So the Philly Bike Show has been going on for a while now, so it's kind of a cool event. And there are nice people down there. I know I've chatted with them a few times, and they've tried to coerce me into coming down to the show, but I haven't really done that because I'm too busy. I hate to say it. I got a lot of things going on. Anyway, we are also just, speaking of too busy, we are just 1 week away from this year's 6th annual Natchog Epic. And yes, your old pal Peddlin' Ron will be there. Yes, I will. I'll be helping out with the kids' ride this year because my legs are about, that's about all they can really handle right now. Hopefully the little kids won't beat me up too much. Yeah, well, it can happen. Anyway, also note that on March 23rd, the Frozen Four final race is happening in Farmington, Connecticut. And that is a training race over in Farmington. It's a road-oriented event. 50 minutes, 45 minutes, 40 minutes, 30 minutes, and 25 minutes. This will be number four of the Frozen Four. There have been three before it. So shout out to those folks that are putting on that race and do every year. And also on the positive side, just, you know, just gets better. More Americans rode a bike than ever before in 2024. Youth participation saw the biggest surge. We'll talk about that more in the show. Meanwhile, let's go down to Mechanical Minute and Ron's Tips of the Week. How to advocate for better biking in your community. I know, I talk about this a lot, but you know what? I'm going to keep pounding on this until we get more people out there, and then 2025 becomes more people rode bicycles than any other time ever in the history of cycling in the U.S. This is how we do it. I just keep pounding it into you guys until you, you know, respond. So this is a very quickie. It's not anything major here, but it is a tip, and so I like to mention it. And whether you have 5 minutes or an entire afternoon, the folks at People for Bikes develop some simple steps that you can take to improve biking in your backyard. So a couple little timelines here. If you have 5 minutes, okay, you can sign up for People for Bikes newsletter, and you can be the first to know when you can take action for better biking in your community, like sending an email to your state representative when pro bike legislation or funding is up for a vote. Hopefully that will come back someday, 4 years from now. Sorry, little statement there. And you could also become a People for Bikes Foundation member, and you could support their work. So People for Bikes are good people. They're good people. They do good things for cycling, and that's what we're all into here. That's why we're listening to Bicycle Talk today, maybe. Okay, if you have an hour, whole hour, reach out to your local elected officials by way of email. Find out your city ranking score, and you can find that by going to peopleforbikes.org, and there's a click on that, so you can find that. Find your mayor or city councilor to email, and if you aren't sure who your local officials are, there's actually a way to find them by clicking on another site at peopleforbikes.org. And send an email introducing yourself and explaining why better biking matters to you. Here's an example of how you can help get started. You just simply write something like, "Hello, my name is Pedlin Ron, and I live in Mansfield Center. I'd love to talk to you about the opportunities to make our community safer and more accessible for people who ride bikes." And then you can insert a personal anecdote, and you can mention your favorite local place to ride, a particular street that would be better for biking, or how you might want safer routes for your kids to bike to school or work, or even to the park. Not kids don't go to work, they go to the park. You can also explain why you're passionate about this work, public personal health, you know, road safety, transportation options, etc. And according to People for Bikes, their city ratings score, which measures the quality of our low-stress bike network, is, and then you can send all this information to them, including links that go over to People for Bikes. So if you have an hour, doesn't take that much time, right? And I'm going to interject another piece here in just a minute here. But if you have an afternoon after you make a connection, keep the conversation going by inviting your elected official out for a bike ride or a walk around the community to show them where you ride, where you wish you could ride, and where improvements could be made. Nothing has more effect than taking a public official out on a bike ride. They will either be A, very receptive to doing it, B, a little hesitant to get out because they haven't been on a bike in a long time, or C, scared to death because it's scary out there and they need to do something about it. So those are all good things. And if you still want to do more, you can always start up a local bike group, anything like that, a Facebook group. I see those over in all sorts of areas in the state of Connecticut. We have different Facebook groups for different regions, which is really cool. And they're all, you know, bike, walk, etc., you know, name, fill in your town sort of thing. And you can get involved there. And one other thing I want to throw in there, as far as advocacy goes, is you could also participate in your, when this is the month of May coming up, I know, it's really not that far away. It's March right now. But in the month of May, we have Bike Month. And Bike Month is a big deal because there's a lot of things going on in Bike Month, including Bike to Work Day and Bike to Work Week, and maybe Riding Your Kids to School Week, that sort of thing. And also, let's not forget the Ride of Silence, which we do here, right here in stores. We do this every year, and it is already on the calendar, and the officials have already been approached as to our taking over of the roads as we do our 3-mile trek around the UConn campus and make our little power statement about why bikes belong on the road. So these are all good things. So you can get involved in any way you wish. It's really a great thing. But if they don't hear you, if you don't make noise, they won't hear you. Let's put it that way. So it does totally help to get out there and do these sort of things. And that is my tip for the week. And you'll probably hear that one a few more times along the way. But anyway, let's move on into the content of the show here and talk a little bit more about that. Where is it here? Okay, more Americans rode a bike than ever before in 2024. Youth participation saw the biggest surge. People for Bikes, once again, released its 2024 U.S. Bicycle Participation Study, offering new insights into cycling trends across the country. This biennial report reveals that 112 million Americans, 35% of those aged 3 or older, rode a bike at least once in 2024. This marks the highest participation rate since the study began in 2014, underscoring an increased interest in bicycling propelled by the COVID-19 pandemic. So in even better news, the youth participation, that would be ages 3 to 17 in bicycling, increased from 49% to 56% since the last study, reversing a steady decline in youth ridership since 2018. Hey, they're putting down the things, you know, those things with the screens on them, and they're getting out and riding their bikes. This is wonderful. You know, you can put a screen on your bike too while you're out riding, and then it'll show you how fast you're going and where you're going, that sort of thing. So we could kind of, you know, we could kind of see both worlds merging together to a certain degree. We all use screens. So Fran and I are both screen people. We have computers on our bikes that talk to us and that talk to the cars behind us and all the other fun stuff that goes on. So, you know, there is screen time on your bike. Or you could go total old school and don't put anything on your bike whatsoever. But I don't recommend that anymore these days because it's just kind of crazy. Hey, do you happen to notice I've got my Irish on here? Because it's not that I am Irish, maybe a little bit, we don't know. I got a League of Nations on one side of my family and I got Italian on the other side, so whatever. But it's St. Patrick's Day, so Franny took some green beads and put them on me. So anyway, shout out to Franny. The industry continues to navigate sales turbulence and economic headwinds, but you know, people are still out riding their bikes, so that's a really, really good thing. The significant increase in youth participation signals a potential new generation of lifelong riders, but with 53% of the riders worried about being hit by a car, no kidding. We must take action to ensure that people today and tomorrow feel safe and comfortable when they're riding a bike. It underscores the urgent need for continued investment in safe places to ride and highlights critical importance of connecting bicycle networks both on and off the road to ensure safer, more accessible riding. Other notable findings from that People for Bikes study. 50% of the riders said they are familiar with bike lanes, paths, and trails in their area. Ridership increased by 9% for youth ages 3 to 9 and 15% for youth ages 10 to 17. Well, what do you know? You know, that's how we got around when we were kids. I mean, there was no mom minivan, SUV, whatever, driving us everywhere. And, you know, that we just rode our bikes. You know, you need to get across town to see your friends.
It was like Stranger Things.
You just rode your bike, you know? Like Stranger Things, right? Boy, we need to finish watching Stranger Things. We never finished that. long story.
We barely started.
Long story. So traveling to and from social recreation activities became the number one reason for transportation, riding, bumping, errands, and shopping. So transportation riding was the number one thing. That's really cool. In addition to these insights, the report provides detailed breakdowns of how frequently Americans are riding, regional participation trends, and indoor versus outdoor riding among their findings. It also examines the consumer motivations and behaviors behind why they ride and how they feel when they ride, and even examines how likely non-riders are to get on a bicycle in the future. As with the past reports, the 2024 data was generated through survey results from 16,000 adults nationwide. The study used the same methodology as previous participating studies, allowing people for bikes to tap into 10 years of historical data to track how bicycling participation and perceptions have evolved in our time. Full report can be accessed for free at the People for Bikes Coalition member site, and you can check it all out and see what you think. And they remember, People for Bikes is a national bike foundation, and U.S. Bicycles Industries Trade Association, representing more than 340 bicycle industry supply members and nearly 1.4 million individuals through their three areas of influence: infrastructure, policy, and participation. They accelerate the construction of safe, fun, and connected places to ride a bike, advance pro bike and pro bike business legislation, and welcome more people to join in with the joys of riding a bike. So our goal is, this is People for Bikes speaking, to become the best place to ride a bike in the world. So anyway, if you're interested, it's peopleforbikes.org. So a little shout out to them and all the good work they're doing and in their nonprofit world, which is really cool. We got a heads up for and thumbs up to the nonprofits right now. We need them more now than we've ever needed them before. Anyway, bringing me on to probably my next subject here. So anyway, we're going to kick this guy out of here, and we're going to talk a little bit more about what is going on in the world. And oh boy, look at that. Wednesday's headlines are about Elon out. Yeah, that's funny. We got some things going on here, and it's a little disturbing what we got going on here, but I'll get to those in a minute. But first off, Franny, it's windy out there.
Oh.
Yeah, it is. It's totally windy out there. So
everyone
knows it's windy, right? Because Windy has stormy eyes.
She does.
Yeah. And so anyway, where did it go? Here, this is it. Cycling and the Wind, Skills for Solo Riding and Drafting. This comes from the Carmichael CTS Premier Coach. They now call themselves CTS. Somehow, when Sir Lancelot came along and got exposed for all the things he was doing, and it was well known that he and Chris Carmichael were tight with one another, Chris Carmichael changed his website to CTS, Carmichael's Training Services. That's, I think, was done for a really good reason. But anyway, so he writes about cycling and the wind, and he mentions that he grew up in South Florida. That's windy. It's peninsula, by the way. If you want to know where the wind is, islands and peninsulas are a big deal. Also, big, huge cornfields out west too. He also lived in Belgium, and he raced in the Netherlands, and he learned a thing about cycling in the wind. So it pains him to see Cyclists make mistakes because they don't understand the dynamics of cycling on a windy day. Sometimes it's just because they haven't mastered cycling skills or how to draft. Whether you've been riding for 20 years or you just got started, you can save yourself some anguish with these tips. And so he's got a few tips here, and this comes directly from his website. And I, in no way, am connected with Chris Carmichael or CTS. I'm just pulling information from his site that is very useful to those of us who ride bikes. So when you are riding by yourself, a tailwind is a blessing. Oh, boy, isn't it? Don't I say that at the end of every show? And keep the wind at your back, right? Yeah, well, when you're in a pace line or in a peloton, it can be anything but easy. The benefit of drafting is that you have less air resistance to fight through compared to the front riders. The problem is that with a tailwind is that it reduces the net air resistance for the riders at the front of the pack. When they can go faster, the benefit of drafting decreases and everyone has to work hard, so you get less recovery time sitting on the wheel. Tailwinds are hot. Air flowing through over your body is crucial for evaporative cooling. Riding into a headwind increases the speed of air flowing over your body, which is why you can get cold in a headwind. In contrast, you can overheat in a tailwind because of the net airflow over your body and the decrease as the difference between your speed and the wind speed decreases. So during the summer, it's important to focus on hydration during prolonged tailwinds because you're going to be sweating a lot. In cool weather, it's important to open up your layers in a tailwind so you can keep your clothing drier. When you can turn into a headwind with sweat-soaked layers, you'll get cold very quickly. So you have to use like a jacket or a vest that is has got a nice, easy-to-use zipper on it so you can deal with regulating your temperatures when you're dealing with the winds. Keep in mind that, you know, at 20 mile an hour headwind that you're going into is also creating a wind chill factor. So, and wind chill is what makes you get real cold real quick. So you do have to be a little careful with that. So picking a fight with a headwind is probably a really, really big mistake. And according to Chris, it's one of the biggest mistakes that riders make. You can't win that fight. The harder you go, the faster you wear yourself out. Thinking about it in that way, your maximum sustained climbing power is 265 watts. That's what they're saying here. You don't magically get more powerful with the wind in your face. Nevertheless, riders push 300 watts into the wind in an effort to maintain the speed that feels normal for that terrain. It only lasts for a few minutes and then the wind wins. Yeah, it will. It's the invisible hill, that's what I like to call it. If you're going to be cycling in the wind by yourself for a long time, let go of the expectations of maintaining a specific pace. Don't let the relentless noise or push of the wind in your face provoke you into pushing harder than you can sustain. Focus on your power output and or perceived exertion and stay steady. Very good. Don't be concerned about your average speed. How many times do I talk about that? It's the time spent in the saddle, which means more than anything else. Should you be someone who is obsessed with training when you get on your bike? I'm obsessed with having a good time when I get on my bike. So be smart in a crosswind. Here's a tricky one. And this one, I was very, very fortunate. And when I started cycling with groups and cycling more competitively and beginning by my bike racing experience, I had some really good teachers and mentors. And they taught me how to do things like an echelon where, you know, you're riding behind the person in front of you, but you're kind of off to the side, depending on which way the wind is blowing. Primarily, if the wind is blowing from the left and blowing at your line of riders, then you're going to be a hair off to the right of the rider in front of you. And the person behind you is going to be the same way. And that's called an echelon. And that's how you remain efficient while riding into a headwind. And you also have to remember that if you are with a group like that, don't let somebody just sit on the front and cook. You know, just take turns. Take turns. Work together. It's a good thing. There's a lot of things in cycling that relate really well to life in general. And, you know, working together, you all get to go to the same place. It's a good thing. So, anyway, when you pull in a crosswind, pull off to the and drop off from the group quickly. Don't dawdle out there in the wind. Similarly, you don't make the first, if you don't make the first echelon, start a second one immediately. Don't fight in the gutter for a non-existent draft. Set up the second echelon before a gap opens to the first group. That's if you're riding in a more competitive type atmosphere. Watch out for wind gusts. Yeah, those are the ones that'll get you. I had a very, very bad experience with a wind gust a number of years ago, and a rider with a brand new set of aero wheels got wind gusted right into my lap. And as many years as I've been on a bike, and as good as my skills are, I was taken off of my game, so to speak, and then I was taken off of my bike. So you got to be real, real careful about those wind gusts. And remember, when you have wind gusts, when you're out riding your bike, if you have a choice of the wheel that you can ride the day of the gusty winds or the really strong winds, try to pick the one that's less aerodynamic, because those aerodynamic wheels, they will grab that wind and they will throw your bike around very, very easily, unless you're super strong and totally aware of it. And I would say the only people that are really good at that and probably can deal with that and experience that well is of the more professional bicycle racer level of rider. I don't recommend aerodynamic wheels for your average person who's just out riding their bike. I don't think they're a really good idea. They're not going to make you any faster unless you're going over 25 miles an hour. And most amateur cyclists do not know what it's like to go over 25 miles an hour. So leave them in the showroom or wherever you saw them and got excited about them. Yeah, they make you look real sexy, but you don't look real sexy when you're splatter out across the road because the wind took you and threw you down on the ground. So anyway, that's another statement. You know, I have a lot of opinions. I don't know if you guys have noticed that or not, but yeah, I do. So stop avoiding cycling in the wind. Why? Because getting comfortable riding in the wind is like anything else. It takes practice. When you look out the window and the flags are flapping, don't get on the trainer. Get out there into the wind. Ride into a headwind on the way out. Ride longer on the way out, knowing that the return trip with the tailwind will take less time. Perfect. Perfect advice. And the other thing I would add to that is, if you're in a situation, and not everybody has this luxury, but if you're in a situation where you've got a grid type pattern of roads that you're riding on, you can tack into the wind. Or so you go into the headwind and then you make a turn either to the right or to the left and go over with the side wind, and then you go into the headwind again, make a left, go back into the headwind again, and just tack back and forth until you get to where you're trying to get to, and then you can just take the straight road back. So if you have that advantage to be able to do that, I strongly suggest that, because it'll just make it less of a mental issue when you're riding your bike. There's nothing that beats you up more than the wind, because you can't see it. You can only feel it, and you can only feel the effects of it. But it is truly the invisible hill, so it's very, very difficult to work with. So you need to kind of use it to your advantage. Riding into the wind on the way out, riding with a tailwind on the way back. And then you get to feel like, you know, you have a false sense of fitness, but who cares? It feels good when you get the tailwind, so you know, use it as a goal. I'm going to get out X number of miles, or I'm going to get out for X number of minutes before I decide to turn around and come back. and plan your routes carefully, because you can do that sort of thing. Another thing that I tell people about with wind is, and we have an advantage here on that, is get off the main roads. Get off. Get back on the back roads where they're a little bit more sheltered, maybe a little bit more rural, maybe more wooded, and definitely hillier, and that will make it so you don't have to hit the wind quite as hard. So there are ways of dealing with that too. And of course, drafting is a skill that hopefully you've had some practice with, or if you haven't had any practice with, talk to someone who knows how to really ride a bike, and they can help you with it, and they'd be very happy to help you with it and give you a skills clinic when you're out riding, because we all just want to ride with people who are safer and more responsible. So those of us who have been riding for a long time, we just want to be safe. And if we can make you safe, then the rest of us are safe. And that's a good thing. It's a beautiful thing. And if you are in a larger group, you want to just stay in the pocket. You want to kind of keep yourself protected. And you can sit in the middle of a pack and do that. And if you're feeling like you want to add to or contribute to it, you can always work your way up to the front. But when you sit into that pocket, you definitely work a lot less as far as in comparison to those who are on the outside of your group or up in the front of your group. So the other thing that you have to be careful of, though, is if you are inside that pocket, you have to be very, very aware of not crossing over wheels or doing anything that might be construed as dangerous for both you and the people you're riding with, more importantly, the people you're riding with. So that can help you out there too. And I'm going to add a couple things to this, and that is to check your weather forecast before you leave the house. Take a look. There's a lot of great weather apps out there right now, and they'll give you a pretty good idea what's going on. Another thing that gives you a really good idea what's going on is if you have a flag outside of your house or your apartment or whatever, or maybe wherever you're starting from. Maybe you're starting from your local community center and they have a big flagpole, and you can see which way that wind is coming from. It's pretty obvious. So use that as an indicator to know where your wind is. If you are riding in a group and in a pace line, remember, you have to learn to look through the rider in front of you. So, yeah, okay, you're sitting on their wheel and you're kind of staring at their wheel and their back end and all, but you'd be better to look through them and look over their shoulder, if you can imagine doing that. And that way you can kind of see what they're seeing coming up too at the same time. It makes a big, big difference, and it just really makes you a more alert and safer cyclist. So definitely want to do that. Let's see what else they have on here. Reduce your frontal area. Yeah. So you gotta get a little more aero when you're dealing with the wind. Dropping down, if you're on a road bicycle, you could drop down to the drops, and so you're getting down a little bit lower on the bike. You're kind of arcing your back a little bit more, and you're just think about getting small. Getting small. Didn't Steve Martin do a thing about getting small?
Get small.
Yeah. Get sure small. Did. Yeah. So you need to get small. And if you can get small, then you can cut through the wind a little bit better. So that helps too, definitely. So, you know, be careful out there. Be careful of the wind. It's windy this time of year. This is why I bring this up. And I also heard Fran come back the other day and go, God, it was windy out there. So that's why I highlighted, hey, Franny, it's windy out there.
Yeah.
So let's move on. Let's move on to other things here. What else do we have here? Okay, here it is. The U.S. DOT orders a review of all grants related to green infrastructure. U.S. Department of Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy is coming for our bike lanes, and it's time to act out now. How do you feel about that? I don't like it. I just don't like it at all. So, yeah, this new clown that's in the seat in D.C., who is a choice of the current little boy Donnie, and he is now doing whatever he can do to make our lives a little bit more difficult as far as the safe streets go. So what will safe streets and road mean for the Under Secretary Duffy? Under Secretary Duffy. Okay, applications are about to open for one of America's signature safety programs just days after the Trump administration officials signaled for their opposition to funding life-saving infrastructure for cyclists and pedestrians. Thank you, Donnie. Anyway, according to a document obtained by Streets Blog, the U.S. Department of Transportation will, by the end of March, begin the application process for Safe Streets and Roads for All discretionary program. Communities will be granted just 90 days to submit their applications, an unusually short time frame, especially for small communities with fewer resources to navigate complex federal applications. It is known as SS4A. Transportation officials across the country have competed for grants from the $5 billion program created by the bipartisan infrastructure law in 2021. Since then, it has funded hundreds of complete streets projects, road diets, and safety action plans across the country. Under the law which created it, SS4A is required to fund initiatives that are likely to significantly reduce or eliminate transportation-related fatalities and serious injuries involving various road users, including pedestrians, bicyclists, public transportation users, motorists, and commercial operators. A list which notably puts the most vulnerable road users first, whether it means... that could mean that sustainable transportation projects offered awards under the last cycle of SS4A could soon get clawed back, leaving the courts to decide whether such a clawback is legal. And so it's also left some advocates wondering exactly what kind of safety projects Duffy will find when it's his turn to make those picks. So we're a little worried about this. We should be a little worried about this. This is not a good thing. It's just ridiculous because we're heading in the right direction. I'm reading you statistics earlier in the show today that tell us that there are more people riding bikes now than there were in the previous year. This is all good news until some bozo down in Washington decides that they don't want to make the streets safe anymore. That's not important. I don't get it. I just don't get it. You know, if we could just get everyone to ride a bike. Hey, there's a reach out for you. Donnie, pick up a bike. Go for a ride. I challenge you. I challenge you and your enormous ego to get out and pedal a bicycle down the street. I don't think you have the you-know-whats for it. I don't think you do. I think you're chicken. I think you're a coward, and I would love to see you on a bicycle.
He doesn't care.
He doesn't care. But that's my call out. So anyway, I did it. I said it. Sorry about any of you guys that are out there supporting
that. The administration just wants nobody to be happy.
Well,
take away everything that makes you happy.
Well, there is that. I think that there's not a lot of forethought in what's going on out there. And we were in a really good direction. The whole infrastructure rebuild was really good, and it was doing a lot of good things, especially for cyclists and pedestrians, which, of course, we advocate very, very strongly on this show. And, it, you know, to pull that away and give give back everything to the threats, the car truck threats on the road. It makes no sense whatsoever. It's unhealthy. It's not safe. And I mean, there's just a number of reasons why everyone should really ride a bike. Changes everything. Changes the attitude. Makes you a happy person like me.
They probably think riding a bike is woe.
Well, no, they think riding a bike is for poor people. That's what they think. If you will ask anyone who is anti-bicycle, they will 99% of the time indicate that they think that bicycle riding is for poor people. And it's not true. We're much richer than they are in so many ways because we ride a bike. But you know, it's values, you know, people's values are so, so different. So anyway, here we are. So what's this? And last week, oh yeah, then here we go. Last week, this is the one we already did. We talked about Duffy, and I think we've talked enough about Duffy. He's shifting criteria, uncertain futures. He's really not going to help us out in a big way because, first of all, you can't help if you don't listen. And I'm afraid that there's a very limited amount of hearing in Washington right now. They seem to have gone deaf, and which is sad to me because, again, things were really going in the right direction. They really were going in the right direction. But, you know, we gotta bear with them and what they're doing. The U.S. Department of Transportation is ordering reviews of all grants related to green infrastructure. How about that? There it is. They're just flagging this segment as a let's call it for what they think it is, a waste of money, and yet they don't understand that all it will do is create more money and save money. When you rebuild infrastructure with cycling and with pedestrians, more people shop. It's been proven, and therefore you stimulate the economy. This whole you know, this big shutdown of the central part of New York where they now charge you to drive your car into the main parts of New York. It increased revenue. I talked about this a couple of weeks ago on a show. It increased revenue by the billions of dollars, right? Because people were compelled to get into the inner city and they weren't afraid to cross the street. They weren't afraid to ride their bike in there anymore because the cars and trucks got thinner, much, much thinner, because people didn't want to pay. Yeah, hang on, folks. The whopping $9 that it cost to bring your car into New York City for the day. That's what it was, $9. People are so weird. They freak out over 10 cents a gallon at the gas pump, and they freak out about having to pay $9 to drive their precious behemoth into a big city. I just don't know where to start, but I won't ever stop, that's for sure. So anyway, we're gonna go on beyond this and find some more fun stuff to talk about, because there is some fun stuff to talk about. I did warn everybody earlier about the fact that, you know, we're going to have some major increases on some of our basic bike parts because of steel industry tariffs. That's something you need to be aware of. If you haven't done something about putting a new drivetrain on your bike now, you might want to do it really, really soon before things get crazy, because prices are going to go through. If you think eggs are expensive, you ain't seen nothing yet. So yeah, things are going to get real, real expensive. So please be aware of that, and just be sure that you go visit your local bike shop and get your bike all fixed up and tuned up for the spring. And if you need a new cassette or you need some new a new chain on that bike, now's the time to put it on there, because it's not going to get any less expensive as the year goes on. It's probably going to be quite a bit higher, actually. So remember, tariffs only hurt consumers. They don't hurt anybody else. They only hurt consumers. Anyway, I think I'm probably preaching to the choir here, but that's what it is. Hey, the Paris-Nice is over. The Race to the Sun, as it is known, is one of the foundations of professional cycling. It was first organized in 1933, and the race features some of the greats among past winners, including Eddy Merckx, Miguel Indurain, Jacques Anquetil, and Sean Kelly. So big, big names in cycling. But we're going to add another big name in cycling here, because there were a couple of Americans this year who did extremely well in the Paris-Nice. And one is Matteo Jorgensen, who secured the overall win on stage 8 of the Paris-Nice. Not his first time, but his second year in a row. Second year in a row, an American cyclist takes the Paris-Nice. And Paris-Nice is like an 8-day stage race. On the last day of the stage race, Magnus Sheffield attacked on the hill and soloed to win on the final stage. Magnus Sheffield is also an American-based rider. Hey, look at that. How about that? Pretty cool stuff, huh? I was thrilled to see this. I mean, it's a classic. It's one of the early season classics. It is not necessarily a really major hilly race, but it is 8 days. So it normally attracts top Tour de France contenders, and 2025 was no different, as Jonas Vingegaard was there, and other big time riders. They kind of use it as a warm up to heading towards the big grand tours that are happening. So really, really cool stuff. And it was just cool to see that American riders got dominant in this race, which is good for American cycling, good for our media and our press to it. And you know, it's a great way to promote the sport. So anyway, that's let's go over here. Matteo Jorgensen. Let's see here. He's an American professional cyclist who currently rides for the UCI World Team Visma Lisa bike. Known for his prowess in the mountains, he is a 2-time defending winner of the Paris-Nice. Now 2-time. It was 1 time before they changed the Wikipedia page this morning. Because yesterday was it. He was born in Walnut Creek, California. He grew up in Boise, Idaho. And he credits the BYRDS, Boise Young Rider Development Squad, for his start in cycling. He had an active 2022 Tour de France and was involved in several breakaways, including on stages 10 and 16. Late in stage 16, he was in the process of chasing down the lead rider when he crashed while rounding a sharp corner. Despite the crash, he was still able to finish 4th in that stage. In the 2023 Tour de France, Jorgensen was involved in a 14-man breakaway on stage 9. With around 47 kilometers remaining in that stage, he went clear from the group, leading the stage for most of the climb up the Puy de Dôme. Oh, the famous Puy de Dôme. However, within 500 meters, he was passed by Michael Woods and others, ultimately finishing 4th. He seems to have a thing about 4th. He had to abandon the tour a few days later, though, due to injuries suffered during a crash. And he won the 2024 Paris-Nice and also has won the 2025 Paris-Nice, becoming the first American to win the race since Floyd Landis did in 2006. So, he also placed 2nd in the 2024 Critérium de Dauphiné. He started the final stage over a minute behind Primoz Roglic and attached attacked on the final climb with Wojcik unable to hold his wheel. Jorgensen and Carlos Rodriguez gained 56 seconds on the leader. With time bonuses, Jorgensen finished the race 8 seconds behind Wojcik, and he also rode in the 2024 Tour de France. So, yeah, American riders, they're coming. He's 25 years old. Gosh, they're all babies now. He's, get this, he's 6'3", 150 pounds. That man is he's as thin as I am. That's amazing. 6'3", 150 pounds, Fran. Mm. Calculate that.
That's a skinny person.
That's called muscle and bone. That's what that is. And a really good set of lungs. That's impressive. So anyway, that's a little mini bio from Wikipedia on Matteo Jorgensen, who has won his second Paris-Nice, which is very, very cool. So let's see, what else do I have here on our list of things to talk about? We got a few more things. I'm going to talk once more about the Natural Epic, which is coming up next weekend. It is Sunday, March 23rd. The registration is still open. It's on Bike Reg. We would love to see you there. I will be there with the with Richard and crew, and we will be running the 6th annual edition of the Gravel Spring Classic. And it even includes the Quinebaug Cup Club Cup Kids Ride, which I'm going to be involved with this year, which is kind of fun. So registration's been open since December, and it's nicknamed the Quiet Hell for its challenging course in tough conditions. The Gravel Fondo will start and finish at the Raceway Restaurant at the Thompson Speedway Motorsport Park in Connecticut's Quiet Corner. Shh, don't tell anyone. The friendly Fondo format includes a tough course with several unpaved chip time segments. A rider's aggregate time determines his or her rankings in the event. So it's kind of like a little race within the ride is what it is. It's not really a race, but it is a race within the ride. And Richard says, we built this event to be a first test of New England's riders' legs, skills, fitness, and resolve. While we typically include a string of classic unpaved sectors, our course team always finds a few new elements to include. There are 5 different distances and times. The Epic will be 84 miles and start at 9 a.m. The Endeavor will be 68 miles and start at 9:30. The Explorer will be 55 miles starting at 10 a.m. The Express will be 35 miles and start at 11 a.m. The Tri-State Kids Ride will be 10 miles and start at 11:10 a.m. And grown-ups are welcome. So yeah, come on along. If you want to ride with your kid on this would be great. I'd love to have you there. I'll keep you entertained in any way that I can, and hopefully we can keep everybody together and have a fun time. And it's okay if we get to a steep section and you need to walk. That's all right. It's okay. There are
some, you'll be walking
there, because I'll probably be walking with you. That's right. There are going to be top teams in the Epic category, and the Quinebaug Cup presented to the top men's and women's division, and that will be on your registration page. So it's not that far away, and it's from me, from where I am, because it's up there in that northeast corner. And I'd love to see you this weekend. It's on Sunday. It should be fun. It should be a really, really fun time. On Saturday, I will be watching the first round of the NCAA Women's Basketball Tournament, which is right here in Storrs, Connecticut. Go Huskies! Ah, boy, oh boy, oh boy. It's going to be a good ride this year. I'm feeling good about this one. So we shall see. We shall see what happens. The Frozen Four Training Series is the last event, is also on March 23rd. If you're more of a road rider, we have the Matchog Epic. This is the tomorrow night, Tuesday, March 18th at the Somerville Theater 55 Davis Square in Somerville, Massachusetts, is the Ciclismo Classico Bicycle Film Festival, and that is at 6 p.m. So if you want to check out some really interesting films from around the world, it's a cool event. It's a lot of fun to go to. You definitely might want to check that out. The end of this month, March 26th through the 29th, is the Taipei Bike Show. And that is kind of a great indicator of what's going to be happening with new stuff in the world of cycling for the following year. So I'll keep my eyes on that, because sometimes we see some really cool stuff come out of the Taipei Show. I know that when I was in the bicycle industry, that was the show that a lot of the bike builders and buyers went to, that because they were scouting out what was going to be the next innovative thing that was going to happen probably in the next year, not immediately. But Taipei Bike Show is a very, very good, very, very good show to go to if you're a total bike geek. But you do kind of have to have credentials to get into that. You sort of have to work for a company to do that or know somebody important to get yourself in there. But it's a cool thing. And let us not forget, the Ride of Silence is back for 2025. And that will be Wednesday, May 21st, 7 p.m. worldwide. And it's always the third Wednesday in May. And you can find out more about that at rideofsilence.org, and it'll give you information about where your Ride of Silence may be. They're all over the country, and our particular one in Connecticut is and has been for the last few years right here in Storrs, Connecticut. A big shout out to Kevin Mahan, who has been the real drive behind this, and this year's ride will take place in Mansfield at 7 p.m. We'll gather at 6:50 for announcements. And the address is the community center or the town hall, which is either 4 or 10 South Eagleville Road, Storrs, Connecticut. They share the same parking lot. And it is a rain or shine event and a ride through the UConn campus no faster than 12 miles per hour. All levels of cyclists are welcome. And a helmet is mandatory. So anyway, that's it. That's what I got today. Finishing points. What do you think about this crazy stuff going on in Washington, D.C.? I am not happy. Not happy. We've just start to make steps forward, and then somebody has to push us back. And, you know, if only we could open the eyes of those who sit behind the windshield of a car as to what cycling really is and what it can be. It would just be so refreshing. It really would. Hey, I have a funny story, and it's not a funny story, but it's a great story, and that is my friend Karen had a job interview with a Norwegian company, and they met in New York City, and he rode a city bike to the interview. Right. Yep. The Europeans got it down. This is a CEO of a very, very, very large company. And how did he get to the meeting point? He rode a bicycle there. Enough said. The rest of the world's got a clue. How about us? Sounds good to me. So I'm going to say it again. It won't be my last time. We need to get loud, get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic and dangerous roads and the price of gas and lack of places to safely ride your bike, and do something about it. Hey, take the Pedal and Run Challenge and park your car for a day and use your bike instead. You just might surprise yourself. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you're watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment down here below, or you can send me an email at bicycletalk, @gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, or now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. If you want to contribute information, drop me an email. This is Pedal and Run. Remember, keep that rubber side down and the wind, remember the wind? We talked about that earlier, to your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thank you for listening. See you next week. Get on your bikes and ride!